This is part two of this two-part episode.
This is your warlord of weird, Sin Bodhi. Look both ways before you cross the street while you're skating on thin ice carrying scissors. You're listening to The Final Count.
Hi, this is former WWE superstar Kim Frost, and you're listening to The Final Count.
This is former WWE and TNA Impact superstar Mike Knox, a.k.a. Nux. You are listening to The Final Count. Keep it tuned.
Hey everybody, Anthony Corelli here, formerly known as Santino Morella, and you are listening to The Final Count.
Yo, peeps, you're listening to The Final Count with my boy Ryan right there, bro. So listen, don't forget who's telling you this. It's your boy, Eric.
Hello, everybody. It is the Croc Rockin', Nickelback Poppin', Curls for All the Girls, the Terminator, Sam Beal, as seen on Impact Wrestling, and you are listening to The Final Count.
This is former WWE superstar Victor, and you are listening to The Final Count.
That's right, wrestling fans. It's that time again. It is time for The Final Count Spotlight. And on this episode of The Final Count Spotlight, I am joined by my guest, the Chosen One, Mitch Huff. That's right, the Chosen One, Mitch Huff, will be joining me in just a few moments. But first, I want to encourage you to keep on checking us out on YouTube. Keep on checking us out here on the audio versions. We do have video versions on YouTube, so go ahead and check those out if you haven't. Do both. Do only YouTube or do only audio, or do both. Get the best of both worlds. But then also, I want to thank you for your support, for all of your support. Whether you listen, whether you watch us, whether you do both, whether you're one that follows us on Facebook even, follow us on any of our social media, our TikTok, our Instagram, our X, formerly known as Twitter. Wherever you support us, however you support us, liking, sharing, following us, all that good stuff, we want to thank you for all of your support. Don't forget, you can now check out our t-shirts and hoodies available now at jcountyapp.com. The t-shirts are only $25. The hoodies are only $45. Go and grab yourself, or that wrestling fan in your life, or just for that family member that's a wrestling fan. Whoever that is that's a wrestling fan in your life, whether it's yourself, a friend, family member, that special someone, whoever that is for you, go and get them a Final Count t-shirt, only $25, and or hoodie, only $45. Go check them out again. That's at jcountyapp.com, and go swag yourself and grab yourself some nice The Final Count swag, as far as t-shirt and a hoodie or both. Thank you for all of your support in that. Thank you in supporting us at wwshop.com. When you use our link in the description of the episode, you are supporting us by just going and using that link and getting yourself that nice WWE t-shirt that you want, that superstar t-shirt that you want, that replica title belt that you want, that figure that you want, whatever it might be, that superstar hat that you want, whatever it is, go and use our link. And by using our link, you might get a discount, you may not, but either way, you are still supporting us right here at The Final Count with our WWEshop.com affiliate link. And so go use that link now as well. We want to thank you again for all of your support and everything that goes along with that. And thank you for just being a listener, being a watcher, just being along for this ride. And it is going to be an awesome ride continuing into the 2024 year. And so, stay tuned. And in just a few moments, we'll be joined by my guest, the chosen one, Mitch Huff. But for right now, I'm going to throw it to some plugs. Sit back, relax, get yourself something, go drink, good eat. And I'm going to throw it to some plugs right now. Then we'll be joined by my guest, the chosen one, Mitch Huff. You can find us on social media by going to facebook.com/thefinalcountky on Facebook, and then on Instagram and Twitter at thefinalcountky, and on YouTube you can find all of our past episodes by just typing in the search bar thefinalcountky. Also, I want to mention we are now on more platforms for podcasts, such as Anchor, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, and Radio Public, and also on iTunes. So be sure to check us out on all those platforms that you can find podcasts on. The Final Count is on all of those platforms that I just mentioned. I want to go ahead and mention that if you go to ColinElbowBrand.com and use the promo code FinalCountKY, you can save 10% at checkout when you use our promo code, and you will be supporting not only Colin Elbow, but you will also be supporting the Final Count and getting merch and all that good stuff. Colin Elbow has good swag. Definitely recommend it. Very comfortable, great fitting swag, t-shirts and shirts. So definitely go over and check out ColinElbowBrand.com. Use the promo code FinalCountKY, that's in all caps, and save yourself 10% at checkout, and tell them the Final Count sent you. And say hi to Al Snow. But with more, speaking of Al Snow, with more on ColinElbowBrand.com, with more on Colin Elbow, here is Al Snow.
Wrestling. A love and a passion we all share. I've started a wrestling brand. The wrestling brand. A brand founded on the aspects of wrestling. Two entities working together to create a product that connect emotionally for people everywhere. Collar and Elbow is the brand. Passion and love for wrestling is the drive. I am Al Snow, and this is Collar and Elbow, the wrestling brand.
All right, for part two. So, what did it mean to you to be a former OVW TV champion?
Oh man, you want to hear a? Oh man, do I let the cat out of the bag now? Oh, do you want to hear the story of all stories?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my god, you're gonna love it. Okay, this was one again. If I ever wrote a book, the name of this chapter was going to be "You're the Man." Well, kinda. .. Okay. Now, this is one of the all me and Randy Royal literally just, because that's who I beat for the title, right? Mm-hmm. We literally were just at a bar a month ago telling this story to an entire bar and just having them roll. This is one of the all time OVW behind the scenes wrestling stories. Okay. So, I don't remember like if it was a special number, like episode or whatever, but I do remember during this time, Dean Hill was the owner, right? He was doing Dean's Law.
Dean's Law, yeah.
Very important, okay? So I get to the building, and that day I am penciled in to wrestle Silvio for the OVW Heavyweight Championship.
Oh.
Okay. Devin Driscoll is supposed to wrestle Randy Royal with Ryan Howe as a special guest referee for the television championship. Okay. Now, this is where it gets fun. I get to the show. Now I know I'm the main event. You know, I knew that before. So I get there. Me and Silvio were talking. Me and Silvio also had really good chemistry, and he was always he really wanted to. This was a time where I just got out of the tag team storyline I was in. They were really trying to catapult me into the main event picture. And Silvio and me had also done a dark match. We talked about this on part one with me and Rocco having a dark match that was really good. Me and Silvio had a dark match. Someone wrote up about it in a dirt sheet or whatever that said this could have been the main event of any SNS. Like, that's how good they thought it was. So we had already known, I think we had done one other TV match. So me and Silvio we had touched. So we knew it was going to be good. And he was wanting to make it real good for me. So shout out to Chris for that. But he, that was our match. You know, our main event. Well, we had a good time. We were going to kill it. I was basically going to have him beat for the belt. That was what it was going to be. But the ref was either going to be bumped or something was going to happen, you know, where I wasn't going to win it. But in the fans' eyes, I should be the champ. Now, where that would have went, I don't know. Like, you know, because that's sometimes you're kind of just throwing the bait out there to the fans to see what they like. Maybe they bought it. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they were like, holy crap, Mitch got screwed. We want a rematch. It might have turned into something bigger than just this one match. But either way, it was going to and designed to catapult me into the main event. And anyway, so me and Silvio kind of had most of our match laid out. And we're getting closer to the start of the show. Well, start of the show was a Dean Hill promo. Okay. And all the wrestlers were supposed to circle the ring, and he was going to line up all the matches for the night. Okay. This is so good. For some reason, again, maybe divine intervention, I don't know what it was, fate. I usually don't get dressed for my match for about 30 minutes before. Me and Sylvia are a main event, though. But because I knew it was a main event, a lot of pressure. We really hadn't got our whole match together. We had got about half of it. I was like, let me go. Because it takes a while. It takes about 10, 15 minutes to put your gear on. And you got to do, you know, you warm up, you do push-ups, you do all this stuff. And so I was like, let me go ahead and just put my gear on just to get that part of it out of the way. And I did have to be around ringside for segment one with this Dean Hill promo. So let me just go put my gear on. And anyway, so we get out there, right? So everybody's out there. And, you know, the boys are being the boys around ringside. We're all kind of looking at each other, cracking jokes. No one's like, we're not really paying attention to the segment. Especially if you're not involved in it. But I am involved in it because he's going to announce me in the main event.
Right.
So I have to kind of pay attention is what I'm getting to, you know, but that's not to the end. I'm the grand finale. So I'm just listening kind of half-heartedly at the beginning, and he's talking and he's like, and we're going to shake things up around here. And today we're going to make some new stars, which this is all supposed to be, you know, what was said. It's supposed to be me getting catapulted to the main event for the OVW heavyweight title. And he starts talking and he's like, and we're gonna have a TV title match and an OVW heavyweight title match tonight. And the crowd's going crazy. And anyway, I forget all exactly how it got worded, but he says, and going for the TV title tonight is none other than this young, up-and-coming, hot, everyone loves him, the chosen one, Mitch Huff. crowd goes crazy. Well, he said that's not what he was supposed to say. He was supposed to say Devin Driscoll, and because Devin Driscoll and Randy had like a storyline going on, and we all that are, you know, hip to what's going on start looking at each other on the outside with like wide eyes. What did he just say?
Right.
And so I look at Silvio on the outside. He starts shaking his head. I'll fix it. I'll fix it. He slides in the ring, and he's like, they try everything. I mean, and then he announces it again. He's like, no. You, Silvio, you got your hands full tonight with Devin Driscoll. And like he announces the main event already, and that's not right, you know. And Silvio's trying to correct him. Devin gets in the ring, and Devin's like, Dean, I appreciate it, but I've got unfinished business with Randy Royal, and why don't you put that match on ice and just let me get my hands on Randy tonight? And Randy, I think, even got in the ring and is like trying to, like, everyone is trying to get Dean back on the right track, you know, like, you're not saying the right matches. And he does not pick up what we're putting down. And like he doubles down, he triples down, he doubles down on the triple down. He says, nope, Driscoll and Silvio in the main event for the title, Huff versus Randy Royal for the TV title, and that's Dean's Law. And that's the gimmick, right? So you can't go against that. And he goes, and as a matter of fact, because this was how it was supposed to be, it was supposed to be Devin and Randy to open the show. He goes, you and Randy Royal for the television title happens now. And he leaves the ring. And we look at each other, and I look at Revolver, and Revolver's on the outside. He's one of the writers at the time. He goes, Huff's going over, super kick. And like they're just, everybody's freaking out. This is not the plan. And he goes, we get in the ring, and this goes back to part one where I was talking about Rip Rogers style, right? Calling in the ring because we've got nothing planned. And, you know, you couldn't tell if you watched the match, but it's because if you know what you're doing, you know what you're doing. But it literally was nothing planned. I'm going to all of a sudden win the TV title. And the best part of the match is, and this is, again, behind-the-scenes footage, it was supposed to be Randy and Ryan, who was the special guest referee. They had business going on the side. And hold on, I got to let my dog out 1 second. But he goes, so they had this whole back part of the match planned with Devin. And they were like, we'll just sub Mitch's part in and we'll do the back end of the business at the end. I have no clue what their business is, right? And it was supposed to be like a swervy count, all this crap that I had no clue what that was. I wasn't hip to any of this crap because I'm supposed to be working Silvio on the main event. And long story short, like Randy calls Miss something, super kick me. And that was supposed to be the cue for them to do their business on the count. And I do the super kick. Well, Randy's so worried about the back end business and getting everybody in position that he walks right into my super kick full force, like doesn't turn, doesn't nothing. And I knock him out stone cold. I mean, out, athlete's foot. It's a shoot, brother. 1, 2, 3. He is out cold. We get to the back. He goes, what happened? Did it go over good? Did we get our bet? He don't remember any of it. So it's the craziest thing ever because, I mean, the match was never supposed to happen. There was back-end business. But that's funny, right? I mean, how the wrestling business works because, I mean, we were not – that match, no, was never supposed to happen. And then I get a little run with the TV title.
Wow, that story is just kind of – oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I can't believe that was not planned. Wow, that's mind-blowing right there.
Yeah, and what's great, like, I mean, the thing is that's back when OVW was a taped show. So we literally could have redone the segment, edited it. There's so many things we could have done to just go, okay, let's just get what we had planned. Right. But the world of pro wrestling, man, we just said, let's just go with it. Let's go with it. We
got you got a TV title right now. But...
yeah, now we got a new TV champ.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff, man, in my career, though, that like that's been that. Like, when I say that, like, happy accidents. Like, that whole my tag title run and that whole feud and with Robbie Walker and like that wasn't supposed to happen. That happened because in War Games, I almost got my shoulder broke for real. Adam Wilde came off the top of the cage and landed directly on my shoulder and really put like, I thought he separated my shoulder. And I was out of action for a couple weeks. And they kept asking me, they were like, man, do you want to, can you come back? Are you ready? And I'm like, I'm not 100%. And it was my working side. It was my left side. So I just want to be careful. And they wrote me and they were like, man, we're going to put the tag team belts on you tonight. You and Adam are ready for them and you're hot. And I said, okay. I said, I'll work around it. But I was legit hurt, you know, and that's the thing about wrestling. You can work around it. And they said, okay, but we got one other option on the table. And if that falls through, then we'll put you in there. You can work around it. But if it doesn't fall through, we got a pretty cool little storyline. And the other option was Adam and Robbie were a tag team before, but Robbie was on the shelf because he got a really bad concussion. So he was out for months, and they hit him up and said, are you ready to come back from the concussion? And he said, yeah, actually I am. So they subbed him in for me where I got taken out backstage and something else. And then he came in as the surprise helper, and then they won the belts. And then we got into a thing like, no, that's my title. I mean, it turned into another awesome storyline and feud that was never really supposed to happen. It only happened because I really was shoot hurt, and they hit him up just by, are you good to go? And he turned out to be good to go, and it turned out to be great. And then me and Robbie, as awesome as that was, we were great enemies, but in real life we became really good friends. So it's cool. I mean, wrestling's really cool how it all works out.
Definitely, and great segue right there, because that was the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. What was it like being in the 8-man War Games cage match at WWSNS April of 2015 and being a part of Team Diamond, the team that would come out with the win over Team War Machine?
Yeah, well, yeah, I kind of gave you the spoiler there, but it was two things that I know now that I didn't know then, which is, A, that was my first ever cage match. Right. And you've seen that OVW cage. That's a big boy.
Yeah.
And then War Games is a gimmick in the cage. Right. So you have to work the gimmick of the match. There's going to be, there's many storylines intertwining in a War Games match. And you have to, you kind of have to put some people in the to start the match that you trust, that you know, that can hold the crowd's attention and keep people interested. And they put me in that position. You know, I was the babyface starter and was in all the way to the close to the end, which the end was, if I'm not mistaken, it was Marcus Anthony's return.
Yeah.
And so what happened was, I can't remember which team he was on. I think he was on our team, right?
Yeah.
But what was, I knew he was coming back, but the big spot was Adam Wilde getting locked out of the cage and then diving off the top. Yeah. And after that, I think I was supposed to feed up, take one move from somebody, and I was out. And already told you in the previous story, he came off that cage and his elbow hit me directly in the shoulder blade. And I mean, I went down and thought, oh my God, he just broke my shoulder. And all I remember doing was laying there and going, man, luckily I only have to take one more move and I'm out. And I did. And we went to the back, and that's again behind the scenes stuff because Jim Cornette was backstage. He was really trying to help Marcus Anthony. He had a page, I mean, a notebook of notes on this match by the time we got backstage. And we just, because again, we went on first because so everyone could break the cage down and the rest of the show could go on. And so while everyone was out there breaking the cage down, all the people in the match were getting the match broke down by Jim Cornette, one of the freaking wrestling geniuses. So that was awesome. And he did nothing but praise my stuff. So I was proud. I was sitting there with an ice pack on my shoulder and just listening to Jim Cornette, who's, again, someone I grew up, you know, really respecting and love his wrestling brain. And
yeah,
so that was cool. But it was, yeah, I mean, it was cool. That's on YouTube. And I don't know why, maybe it was my daughter and me, but I went back and watched that match for the first time and since ever. And there's a lot that I would change now, like going back, I like that, like nitpicking it, but it wasn't bad. I mean, it was fun. It was cool. It was, I wasn't in the position that I was going to, you know, a year later, I would have been probably the Eddie Diamond of the match or the Marcus Anthony of the match, more of the top tier baby face, but it was cool. I mean, it was, it's an honor to be, that's one thing that I've known, like I can always hang my hat on my, ability and my work that usually in those big kind of gimmicky matches that are supposed to be, so I'm involved in most of them. You know, I was involved in the first run for the ropes match down on the main event down on the, waterfront, which there's a whole story behind that. Well, maybe I don't know if we'll get into it or not, but I was supposed to be the team captain for it. It ended up being Big John, but I was supposed to be the team captain for that match. And then, you know, there was the match we did at Against the Grain Brewery where they put me and Rob Conway against. That's one of my favorite matches, by the way, with me and those guys. And that was but that's just kind of a tip of the cap. You know, it's when you're young and you're, it's good. It feels good because they're acknowledging you. Not every acknowledgement has to be a belt or whatever. Sometimes it's literally the position that they put you in on the card.
Definitely.
And you know, like I said, even in the War Games spot, that wasn't my team, but to put me in the leadoff position, that's a big responsibility. Yeah.
Of course. Can you talk about your OVW Heavyweight Championship number one contendership match? That was the last man standing match against Daniel Eads.
Yep. So me and Daniel, there was a little bit of, obviously there was some fabrication in our storyline. But we really did do some of the same indies. But that was like a feud and a matchup that a lot of people was excited about. We had both a similar, you know, we were both young, athletic, good builds and looks, and a lot of potential for some good matches. And it was weird because they started it, we got to a couple good matches, and then it kept prolonging, and then they were going to put a button on it, and then they like something would happen where it would kind of like just keep the story going. Well, that match that you're speaking of, the last man standing match, was supposed to be the grand finale of our feud. That was the button on the feud. Winner becomes the number one contender. And great. You know, I mean, I'm all for that. I mean, it was a cool thing. Again, never at that point had been in a last man standing match. So the way I am, again, perfectionist, student of the game, when you tell me, I know ahead of time what I'm doing, don't get me wrong, but I go to work, like I start studying. I get on the network, I get on YouTube, I'm watching Last Man Standing matches, I'm watching the psychology of them. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to do my due diligence and make it as good as I can make it. And so I had a lot of stuff planned for that match, and I was expecting this was a, I don't know, 4-6 month feud, me and him. We had a nice long feud. that the fans really liked. So I was assuming button on the feud, last man standing match to really get what it needs to be, like to get the drama it needs to be, you know, to really build to where the crowd is like really counting with the ref. Nah, you know, oh, he's up. Like, you need time.
Yeah. Man, okay.
Need some time to build that match up as it goes. And when they told me I had a last man standing match, I was pumped because I was like, cool, we're gonna get some time. And then we got to TV and they were like 10 to 12. And then I believe someone went long early in the show, so we had to go like 10 minutes or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it kind of spoiled it for me a little bit because when I watch it, I'm just like, it could have been so much better. You know, like we had to rush to the drama instead of like right. really building to the drama. I felt like it could have been a lot better than it was. I'm not saying it was bad by any stretch, but I felt like it could have been a classic if they would have said, hey, even at an SNS or something, you got 20 minutes, last man standing, tear it up, you know, no, don't worry, you know, you got plenty of time to get there. But when you got to start really getting people to buy into, you're not going to make it up to the standing, you know, 10 count,
mm-hmm.
and you got to take into account every match you've done before. You know, we had already had 4 or 5 months of stuff we had done. Like, you really got to pull some tricks out to get people to buy into it. And when I watch it, I'm like, I think it's solid, but I'm like, man, it could have been a lot better if they would have just gave us 5 more minutes.
That makes sense. Like, when I went back and watched it, it was a good match. I didn't realize it was only 10 minutes that y'all got. But yeah, it was a good match. I definitely think 5 more minutes would have been great for it, for sure.
Yeah. And again, those are little you know, it's nitpicking, but it's
yeah.
kind of behind the scenes of what it really is. You know what I'm saying? Like it would be, yeah, 5 more minutes. And I think we could have really got those people hooked. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we got them a little, but I mean, I think we could have really had the whole arena chanting 8, 9, you know, like that's what you want in a last man standing match, you know,
definitely.
But when you've only got 10 minutes to get them to buy in, you got to get to that stuff pretty quick.
Quick, yeah.
Yeah, and the quicker you get there, the fans are kind of like, oh, okay. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of a weird, weird thing. So, good. I liked it. I didn't love it because it was just because of time restraints. Nothing to do with Daniel or anything else. But I think that match could have been a lot better than it turned out to be, even though it was solid.
Right. That makes sense. No, for sure. So the next match, can you talk about the Falls Count Anywhere match at OVW SNS Anarchy? This was from February 17th, 2016 against Rocco Bellagio for the OVW Heavyweight Championship match.
Yeah.
Championship.
Yep. This is the one. This is number one on his list, my list, match of the year. 2016, we joke around to this day. Every once in a while, we'll just send each other a random text saying, what about that, the Modi 2016? We call it the Modi, M-O-T-Y. Yeah, we had in part one, you know, we had that dark match, right? We already had a banger. So we knew that the chemistry was there. And that's very important in wrestling, like having chemistry with your opponent. And, So we knew we had it. Like again, there's a little bit of that match was supposed to happen a month earlier. There was a lot of stuff. Like I was just telling you a second ago about the I was supposed to be the captain of the original Run the Ropes group,
mm-hmm.
right? I was supposed to be the OVW champion going into Run for the Ropes. Wow. So another behind the scenes story. You're getting all the good stuff tonight. So yeah, seriously. So they come to me and say, hey, Mitch, we want to put the belt on you. Devin was the champ at the time. Mm-hmm. Devin wants to drop the belt to you and we want to do it in E-Town. because we're trying to really pop E-Town. So they wanted to do a title change in E-Town, so to really get like the E-Town people and the Louisville people to go, man, we got to go to the E-Town show. Some, you know, the title might change.
Yeah,
old school trick, but it works. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me and Devin to have an Iron Man match in E-Town. Wow. So so Devin, 30 minutes. I don't think we were going an hour, but I think Devin pitched overtime and all that crap. But literally, I mean, I was training my ass off to go like a 30-minute, 40-minute Iron Man match with Devin. And they told me that's what it was going to be, to the point where I don't know what happened, but like a week or two later, it just went away. I mean, but they pulled me aside and said, you're going to get the belt in E-Town. And then like a week before E-Town, they said, yeah, it's going to be Driscoll. We were just talking backstage. Driscoll and Big John in E-Town and Huff and Eads. They were going to put the button on me and Eads in E-Town. That was, yeah. And I heard that and I was like, what happened to the title? And Devin really, he was pissed because he really wanted to do an Iron Man with me. And he was going to tape it and he was going to send it off to where he was friends with Jarrett. So anyway, long story short, it didn't happen. But that kind of put a chip on my shoulder in a way. Like, again, it's not that the being the champion like is the end all be all, because there's been a lot of champions that whatever, but there's a certain part of your ego that, if you do this, yeah. You know, like hey, I want to be the man, and yeah. And I deserve it, you know. Right. I deserve to be the man. I'm the best baby face we got. And so there was a part of that where I was like, after it didn't happen, to now Rocco's like, I want to have a match with me. He's the champ and I'm not going to win it, but he wants to, but we literally go, we're going to tear the fucking house down tonight. I mean, that's what the mindset we both had. He was kind of getting into this little rut where he was having good matches, but he wanted to have a banger. I was, like I told you, I was kind of on fire mentally. I was starting to get, everything was really clicking for me. And I was like, we already knew we had the chemistry to pull it off. So that part was, we didn't have to worry. And we put a lot of thought into it. And the funny thing about that one is we're backstage and they go, because it was Anarchy Rules or something.
Anarchy Rules, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. Every match had to have a gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was the whole point. So they come to us before TV. So I'm wrestling Eads in the main event. I think it's whenever I had to announce what the kind of match it was going to be. Maybe that wasn't the main event of that, but, it was another TV that I had a match. And then after I won the match, I got to pick the
set. Yeah. Right.
But we're backstage all show long. We don't know what we're picking. They're told us, you all can pick any gimmick you want, but we already have a coffin match, a stretcher match was on the show, like something else match, something, whatever, a ladder match, like, or maybe a ladder match, but whatever. They told us everything that was on the show, and then they said, you all can do anything else. But me and Rocco wanted to literally go out and just have a classic. We called it our... We wanted to do Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker WrestleMania, but our version of it with our characters. And we kept saying that, but we were like, that's just a wrestling match. So we're like, how can we get to that? You know, or like with a gimmick, you know, yeah. Like, so we almost did this is another behind the scenes. We were really close to coming out and doing a three stages of hell match, where like the first one was going to be a street fight. Second portion was going to be, I don't even remember what the third one, whatever it was going to be. And then the third one was going to be just a wrestling match if needed. Like, yeah. You know, I think, and we were going to be split 1-1. And then we were going to get to have our classic Shawn Michaels WrestleMania, Undertaker WrestleMania type match. And, but Rocco had already done so much with the ladder. Like, he had done the thing at the, you know, the against the
Burden.
Yeah, and he literally always said, Mitch, I don't want to be associated as the ladder guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking, we are, you know, going back to the Dean Hill story, like, this is like, we got out with, I forget how long TV was back then, an hour. We have 40 minutes to figure this out, right. And I have to go out and do a match and then announce it. And I keep saying three stages of hell. And he's like, I just don't know. And then finally we come up with, let's do a Falls Count Anywhere match, street fighty type match. And then we will do all the bells and whistles with, and then we'll try and do the exciting WrestleMania stuff at the end.
Yeah.
That's the blueprint that we came up with. So that's how it came about. And we announced it, and then we had a good couple weeks to come up with a match. And I mean, that was a fun, my brain, my wrestling brain is what I call it, loves that shit. Like, it turns on and I start studying. I start hitting up Rocco with ideas. He starts hitting me up with ideas. Like, we just start collaborating we came up with what we came up with, and it was good, and it was phenomenal. I mean, it was so good.
That was definitely a great match right there. I don't remember correctly or not, but I think, was that the match that he threw you off of the top?
Yep, and that was kind of the thing, right? Because it was like, I was so hot as a baby. And it was like, that was kind of his gimmick too. He had thrown some people off the building.
Yeah.
And it was also like, we were doing all these falsies and kickouts that was like, what can I do to, like, that's what he was saying. Like, I got to do something big to keep you down because you're such a baby face here.
Yeah.
You know? And so and he was like, let's go back to the off the building thing. Which he tapped back into it a couple other matches with. I think he did it with Randy a couple months later. He started it with Eddie, but that was like, what brought him back in, was throwing Eddie off the building.
Right.
I think that put Eddie away. I mean, I don't think Eddie ever came back from that.
Yeah, I think
that was the end of him. So we were trying to come up with a way, like, what is the most believable way to keep me down as a baby face and get him heat, heel. You know, like, we're trying to accomplish a lot of things, like, where the fans aren't going to be mad that I lost because it took you throwing me off a building to beat me.
Right.
But at the same time, you son of a bitch, you threw our fucking hero off a building.
Exactly.
And that's what we were trying to accomplish with it. And again, it went with the false count anywhere. So it made sense.
Definitely. Now, can you talk about, there was a triple threat match, this is on YouTube, by the way, between yourself, Scott Cardinal, and Devin Driscoll at the arena in Jacksonville. It was I don't remember the name of the show, but I don't think it was Grindhouse yet, but it was over there at the arena.
Yep. So yeah, that was kind of the birth of the arena. And so people didn't, it wasn't a big crowd. There's a lot of, at that point, if you didn't know where the arena was when it first opened, you couldn't find it. You know, it was hidden. And Scott and me, going back to part one, right? Scott was my tag team partner in my first match ever. We ran into each other at the gym when I was getting back into wrestling. He wanted to get back into wrestling. Not for the same reasons I did. He wasn't trying to go to WWE, but he was kind of trying. He had a kid. He was kind of trying to do the stuff I've talked about as well, but he wanted to wrestle in front of his kid. He just kind of wanted to have fun with wrestling.
Yeah.
But we started training. He started coming to my training that I was teaching at. Devin Driscoll was a mutual friend, but Scott had been in contact with him. Now, I knew Devin back in 2006, 2007. Devin was assigned to WWE. He was a signed wrestler. And his whole story is crazy too. But Devin, and again, maybe it was just my young and insecure, not insecure, young, dumb, whatever. I used to talk to Devin all the time in the gym. I used to talk to all the contract guys. I was one of the boys. I was like one of the boys without being signed.
Right.
And because end of the day, and I'm sure you've noticed this by doing interviewing people, like, we're all just humans. And most of us are wrestling fans. Some of us are actually wrestlers now, but we all, like, it's just respect. And You know, and I was always in the, like I said, the basketball world and the sports world anyways. I had no problem just going up and like, hey, man, and asking questions in the gym. And like I told you, everybody went to my gym back in the day. And Devin used to be there all the freaking time. So I used to talk to Devin all the time. So when Scott had brought him up saying that he had been in contact with him and he was going to Global Force Wrestling, it was a thing back then. Yeah. At the time, again, my goal is WWE, but I'm not – if there's a new thing on the horizon, it's going to be big, Global Force Wrestling. I'm not against going to that. So wrestling's all about making connections and getting seen at the right time by the right people. And I was – we were sitting there, and he was like, yeah, I'm going to bring Devin in. And I couldn't tell you if I guessed why the storyline was or whatever. But we decided to do a triple threat and just the three of us. And they're really, like I said, I mean, because of the, I remember the bridge traffic was horrible at the time. And you didn't know where the arena was if you didn't know. And Tony, God love him at the time, was horrible about promoting the shows. So there was not that many people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And, but we still went out and performed like there was.
Yeah. And that's the thing I looked when watching it, that thought came to my mind, like, and I was there, my sister was there actually as well, and we were there.
Awesome.
I had a front row seat for it, actually. I was sitting like there's an entrance, I was sitting on like the corner, not by the entrance, but like around on the left hand side of the ring. Yeah.
Yep.
So
yep.
On the left hand side of the ring in the front row, and for whatever reason my sister was sitting behind me, and there's a whole row of empty seats and like that you're sitting behind me, but anyways, but no, I was like, y'all didn't end up performing that show any differently than if there would have been 200, 300 people there.
No, and that's what I was, I think I talked about on part one, like, if you're trying to make it in this business, so you have to take it seriously, right? And you have to treat each, you have to treat each individual scenario for what it is, but also practice for what you would want it to be. So there's two ways to look at that exact scenario. One, you could go, there's only 40 people here. Let's just go out and have fun and phone it in. Okay. It's one way. Let's be safe. Let's not take any bumps. Well, yeah, sure. That's one way to do it. Or you could say, we got three really good workers. We have a triple threat match. Let's tell a story and try and entertain these people. I don't care how many people's here, 40, 400, 4,000, four. Yeah. And either way, you still take that mindset for when there is 4,000. Right. You do the same match. You know, I mean, maybe you don't do all the crazy shit, but crazy bumps, but yeah, you kind of give them the same story, same blueprint, and that will translate, that will serve you better, will serve the people better. And once again, this is a business where your job is to keep people interested and to keep them coming back. So if even if there's 40 people in the audience, you want those 40 people to come back and pay again. And then you also want them, that 40 people, to go to their buddies and say, hey, this triple threat match was awesome. You got to come to the next show.
Yeah.
And now instead of 40, there's 100. And then it grows again, you know, to 200. That's how you grow. And then you got to remember the arena at the time, that might have been like their fourth show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, nobody really knew who it was. So, and that's, again, I've been in locker rooms where guys literally go, there's no one out there. Let's not do nothing. And let's just go out and bullshit. And I've also been, and I always say that is a thing. Or you could say, no, let's use this for what it is. Let's pretend this is a house show. Let's pop this crowd like a house show. I'm not saying go out and do a bunch of dives and take a bunch of big, big bumps, but there's a way to still work a match that is extremely storytelling. It entertaining for your people that paid to see you. Otherwise, yeah, if you don't, you cheat the fans, and they might leave and go, I'm not paying $10 to see that again. Mm-hmm. that's the last thing you want, you know? So sure. You got to take, and that's what I told you earlier. I take pride in my performance always. And I don't care. I've wrestled in front of 10 people. I've wrestled in front of 2,000 people. I mean, I've done both, and there's a cool certain feel to both of them, you know? Definitely. So, yeah, I mean, definitely. Yeah. I'm that's cool that you were there though. I mean, cause yeah, we didn't, we literally didn't say at one point did one of the three of us go, oh, well, there's only 40 people out there. Let's not do anything.
Yeah.
We didn't know, but just do whatever.
So, exactly. Now who were some of your favorite people to work with in OVW? Or that you enjoyed working with in OVW?
Rocco is probably my number one. Because again, we just had this great chemistry mix. Robbie Walker's up there for me. We had some good matches. Me and Silvio had some good chemistry. I think we only got like three in. But we also got one. We did a triple threat in Knoxville with Robbie Walker, and that was freaking phenomenal. I wish I had that on tape. Eads was good. Like I said, Eads. I think if Eads would have been local, I think our stuff would have been a lot better because again, he was coming. I think from Evansville, Indiana. He would work a full day of work. Lee or get off at like 3 o'clock and he would come in, but it was like a 2 hour drive.
Yeah.
By the time he beat traffic and got into the building, I mean, he would literally get in the building at like 6:30. We'd be starting the darks at 7 and me and his segment might be 7:30. So he'd have an hour.
Yeah.
I'd be there, you know, 4:30 and I'd be coming up with everything. And by the time he got there, it would just be, like I said, it'd be a lot of me saying, all right, this is what we're going to do. What do you want to do here? Okay, I need you to do something big to me here. What would you like to do? And he was great about filling in where he was supposed to. But I feel like if I could have had more time with him, like as far as we could have probably put together some more stuff, even though very good. I mean, oh, goodness gracious. Let me think. Yeah, I mean, those are probably my top. Robbie and Rocco, which are, like I said, two of my best friends. And it's funny how that works.
There you go. So when training young talent, what is the best advice you like to give to them? And what has been like training young girls and young guys in the business?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I can pinpoint one specific like advice I give, but the one thing I ask every trainee is what their goal is. And I say, do you want to do this for a living? Because there is a difference between just wrestling on the indies, wrestling at the arena, or trying to make this your full-time career. Because that's one thing I see that's a big pet peeve of mine is like, oh, I'm going to be a pro wrestler. And they're not in shape. They don't look good. They don't take care of themselves. Like, that's what it is. And again, these guys, when I was coming up 2006, like they were in the gym, in the tanning beds, and like look was important. I think, you know, I'm not saying you have to look like a bodybuilder to be a pro wrestler, but you got to have a look about you. Yeah, some kind of look.
Definitely.
Like I said, I think the rule, Vince McMahon, old rule was like, you got to turn heads in the airport. You want people to go, who's that guy? Mm-hmm. What's he do? You know, and so I'm real big on like telling them, like, take that part serious. Rip Rogers even used to say, look in the mirror. Would you pay to see you? And if your answer is no, because that's another thing is like, there's a lot of things in wrestling we can't control, right? Can't control a lot, but you can control the way you look. You can control a lot, your gear. Yeah. I hate guys that wrestle in basketball shorts and t-shirts. Like, you can control that, you know? And it goes a long way with like they don't realize it, but when the guy comes out in really nice tights and he automatically has a different elevation in the fans' eyes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whether they realize, you know, always. So I always preach that about like taking it seriously, keeping the presentation seriously, because it's a full-time job. I mean, it's not just coming to training 2 or 3 days a week. You got to go to the gym on your own. You have to watch countless matches on your own. You have to do your homework. You have to study and study and study. And if you're, you know, just like, if you're an NFL player, well, they do film study, you know, like before games. I mean, like, it's not like this is professional wrestling. So I try, like, again, so, but I also coach and teach to people's goals. If you come to me and say, hey, like Mike in part one, I just want to have a match for my brother. Okay, I'm not going to hold you to those standards. Right. But if you tell me day one, oh, I want to make it to the WWE, well, then you better display, you know what I mean? You better be in shape. Because I'm telling you, I was in the system. I was in the OVW system when WWE owned it. I know what it takes. I watch those guys every single day go to the gym. Every single day they are training at OVW. They had a 6-day-a-week schedule when they were trained. You know, you all come to the arena three times a week and do one show a month.
Right.
That ain't the same, you know. And I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying, like, it's like there's levels to it. And I don't care if you just want to be the guy that wrestles on the arena shows. That's cool. We'll train you to be that. I have more of a, I guess, understanding for the ones that want to do it full time, because that was my goal. So, definitely. So I try and just impart, like, you know, what I learned in the system from OVW and WWE, and then what I did wrong. You know, what I did, you know, so yeah, I mean, and then I'm real big on psychology in wrestling. And I teach them, like, when they get to that level, after we learn all the basics, like, I'm real big on teaching guys why are you doing this? And then if you can explain to me why, that's cool. You know, or for your characters, this, and you can tell me why, cool. I'm not against anything. Like, I'm not the guy that if you tell me, oh, I want to do a whatever driver, a 360 tombstone pile driver. And I'm like, okay, cool. Why?
Right.
But if you can tell me why and make it make sense, cool. I'm cool with it. Like, I'm not the guy that says, no, that's stupid. Like, no, it's fine if you can make it make sense. So that's kind of my goal with the younger wrestlers, is because, and I get it, I was a younger wrestler. You want to do it all. I tell them all the time, I used to do these moves at OVW. I used to do like this backflip off the top rope, land on my feet. I would throw a guy into the corner and practice, kick off his chest, do a backflip, land in the middle of the ring, spear him in the corner. I never used any of it when I finally got there.
Right, right.
I was capable, but you just don't need all that. You know what I mean? So you gotta learn. I mean, so, but when you're young, you just want to do it all.
Want to do it all, yeah.
No. But I get that, you know, at the same, because I was that guy. I wanted to do it all. But you just don't. But again, going back to part one, you know, I wanted to be a heel, mm-hmm. and I learned I was better served as a baby. You know, you gotta go. You gotta figure stuff out. I mean, if you would ask me in 2007, what is a great wrestling career for you? I would have been like, bumping heel, Intercontinental Champion, you know, that level.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but I probably had a certain ceiling at that level.
Right.
Once I turned baby and got over, like, I realized, man, there's another level. Now I'm in the main events as a babyface. I don't know if I would have ever been in the main event as a heel. Not because I wasn't good, you know what I mean? Just because it's different. I mean, yeah. I was more well received as a good baby face.
Right.
Even though
I like that you point that out about psychology, because I feel like it's a lost art in some cases, just because, you know, you don't see a lot of, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of these wrestlers, you don't see them using psychology today. You really don't. You don't see them explaining or why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? There's no reason behind the move. They're just doing flashy spots or flifty doos or whatever you want to call it. And there's no reason behind it. So I like that you are teaching that, and you teach that, and you're big on that. I like that.
Yeah.
If you could have a dream match with anyone dead or alive, past, present, or future, who would your opponent be? What type of match would it be? And where would the location or venue be?
So this is interesting because, like, you know, big Sean fan, right? But and it's funny because a lot of fans used to always say they wanted to see Sean versus AJ, right? Because they thought, oh my God, AJ is the new version of Sean.
Right.
Well, have you ever watched the Table for Three on the network? They sit down and Sean's like, I don't know if it would work because A, what's the business? B, we're kind of similar. Like the actual story sometimes is being different. So I don't know if me and Sean would actually, that obviously would be a dream, right? Match, but I don't know how good it would be because I work a similar style to him. So all time, huh? That's a tough one. Yeah, that's a tough one. I have to think about it for a sec. Kind of match, I could already tell you. Just a regular, just give me time, wrestling match. I don't need a crazy gimmick. That's never been my thing. One thing about me, I ain't never bled. I've never, not that I'm against bleeding. I actually thought bleeding was really cool when I was young. Like, I've just never had to do it. Or never felt compelled to do it. I mean, that's another funny thing, right? Like, I loved hardcore wrestling in the 90s. Loved ECW. Loved Mankind and all that shit. But when I actually got into it and learned the actual art form, I mean, that was right across the, you know, the river. IWA, I've been offered to go to IWA many times. But I was always like, that's just not, I don't need it. You know, like certain guys need it. Certain guys don't. Love them to death. But I remember Pondo made a joke, you know, crazy Madman Pondo.
Madman Pondo, yep.
He lives very close to where we trained at the arena. And he had just got back from doing a death match tour in Japan.
Right.
He made a joke. He came into my class and he was beat up. He just got done doing a bunch of shit, you know, over in Japan. And he goes, he said, all right. And he was kind of limping. I said, you all right, Pondo? And he goes, hey, I'm just a little sore, beat up. He goes, you know, I'm over there doing my crazy death match shit. And he goes, you know, I wish I could throw a drop kick like Mitch Huff, but I can't. But, you know, he was like joking, but being kind of like, that is true in a sense. Like, everyone's got their niche.
Definitely.
You know, and I don't, that's just never a route I've had to go. I'm not against it. I mean, the match with Rocco, we did some, we did a table spot. We did some weapon stuff. I'm not against it. If it makes sense
right.
for my cool. character, it never, I didn't have to go that route. And again, it's not good, bad, or indifferent, but the ones that do it with no reason, no story, the ones that just literally go out there and just beat the shit out of each other with weapons for real. Like, that's just horseshit to me. So, but yeah, I mean, so it would be a regular wrestling match, whoever it was. I mean, man, there's a lot. I mean, Sean, of course. I mean, I would say him, even though I don't know how good it would be. Triple H, I would think, would be phenomenal.
I think that'd be a good match.
Yeah. Orton, I don't know, again, how great. I mean, Edge is, I'm a big Edge fan. I think he's very underrated. Roman right now, what he's doing, I mean, he's top tier right now. He's more main eventy and kind of big spotty matches, but I think he's phenomenal. I think he's probably the best in the business right now, in my opinion. But different style. He's more of a different style. But it would be a regular wrestling match in venue. I mean, I would probably say, just because I've never worked it, I think there ain't no crowd like a Chicago crowd. Those crowds are ridiculously hot. Or, I mean, of course, there's always Madison Square Garden. But I would, man, there's some good, maybe Punk in Chicago would be, I have to be a heel, though.
Yeah. There you go. Now, that would be, those would be some good matches, I'm sure, and be interesting to see for sure.
Yeah, like I said, I don't really think about that, you know. I just, if I'm in the position, I'm gonna do my part.
There you go. Couldn't say better. Any upcoming shows that you want to promote, like Grindhouse? I know you work with Grindhouse
Grindhouse. I'm not personally working any soon, but we do a show last Sunday of every month over in 1416 Spring Street, Jeffersonville, Indiana. This month, it's actually this Sunday. I don't know if this will come out before then, but it'll be this Sunday because of Christmas. But usually, it's the last Sunday of every month. I'm over there. I'm just agenting. I just, my students, I help quite a few of them with their matches, put them together and help them. But it's a good show. I mean, they draw decent crowds, 100 to 200 people, but that's about what the arena fits.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're basically sold out shows. And, but it's a weird, it's kind of a cool hybrid. It's like a student show, but also a little mix of some veterans, and like they have had Chase Stevens has been on there recently a lot, you know what I mean? It's cool. There's some locals that have been around a while that are kind of they splash around in there here and there. I mean, they had Aaron Williams in there a lot. They've got some other guys that are on the indies and active because that's the thing about Grindhouse. We bring in guys for our students to work when they're ready.
Yeah,
of course. So it's cool. It's a cool hybrid.
Of course. Well, I definitely encourage all fans get out to Grindhouse and check out Grindhouse Pro Wrestling and over in Jeffersonville, Indiana. And if you're not following, go follow them on Facebook and everything. The Grindhouse pages. I believe they're on Instagram too. Not for sure about that, but yeah. Check them out on social media. And then, Mitch, how can fans find you on social media?
Instagram, for sure. That's the. I usually accept everyone on Facebook. I'm just, Mitchell Huff on Facebook, but Instagram, I think it's at Mitchell C. Huff. Pretty active on there, whether I don't post a whole lot. I do post, but I post a lot of stories and Twitter. I don't know what my Twitter is. I think it's the same as my Instagram. I think it's at Mitchell C. Huff. I check them all, but the main two I'm on are Twitter and Facebook. Promoters, all that, they usually hit me up on Facebook usually. But I usually accept, and I don't think my inbox is blocked either. Unless you become like a creep that hits me on style. I've had plenty of that. I mean, if you're disrespectful and you hit me up way too much, I'll block you. But if you're cool and you can keep it cordial and whatever, then I don't mind it.
Yes, sir. There you go. Well, fans, I definitely encourage you to go give Mitch Huff a follow. Tell him you heard about him on the final count, or you watched the final count and you saw or heard this interview, because we have both audio and video available. So go follow him on Facebook, on his Twitter, on Instagram as well. And go give him a hello, say, what's up, Mitch? But Mitch, for right now, I'd like to thank you for coming on the final count. And you're welcome to come back anytime, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I mean, we covered quite a bit in parts one and two, but We didn't cover it all.
There could be a part three.
There you have it, wrestling fans. That was my interview with the Chosen One, Mitch Huff. And again, I'd like to thank the Chosen One, Mitch Huff, for coming on the show. But right now, as I say every week, we will see you down the road.